It's time to meet the street with me, David Plimpton. That's better. At the mouth. Well, hello everybody, and thank you for tuning in to this, the first episode in my brand new podcast, documenting life in and around my green and pleasant corner of the country, Altrincham Avenue, which is where I live alongside my wonderful wife Jill, and it's certainly a hotbed of activity that I'd like to share with you. For those of you who don't know me, my name is David Plimpton. I'm a retired civil servant who resides here on the avenue with my wonderful wife. I've said that bit. I thought it would be great to share some of the excitement that goes on down that bit. Whether it's knowing a shortcut into town when you're trying to get to Ryman's the stationers before the lunchtime rush, tips on how to get rid of that big ginger cat that keeps leaving its waste on my flower beds, or simply catching up with some of my friends as we chat over a cup of coffee. Quick note, I won't be having anyone actually in the house. I think it's unhygienic to have more than two people under the roof at any given time. And secondly, Jill doesn't agree with strangers using the downstairs cloakroom. But thanks to the miracles of the internet and its radio waves, all of my friends will be chipping in with anecdotes aplenty over the coming weeks and episodes. But before we go any further, let's catch up with what I've been up to this week. Well, you'll be pleased to know the library's been in touch again, and I've received this wonderful piece of news from a very helpful assistant librarian by the name of James, who's dealt with my query very professionally, not like the other one, the woman who I had that falling out with over my copy of Spycatcher last May. Anyway, it looks like I've been very lucky this week, as nearly all my books are in. Let's listen to what James had to say when he got in touch yesterday.
Hello, Mr. Plimpton. It's James Ruskin at the library. This is the call regarding your books. The Law of Meetings by Sebag Shaw is in. Ventriloquism for Fun and Profit by Paul Winchell is in. Making Nice Things Out of Straw by Eunice Svinitsky is currently out of print. So we may just have to put that one to bed. Thank you. Goodbye.
Well, there you go. 2 out of 3 isn't bad. Also this week, hang on. Don't come in. Don't come in. I'm recording. No. I'll see to that later. That was Jill. Didn't think she'd come upstairs. Where was I? Right. So, the big news on the street at the moment is the arrival of some new friends. That's right, new neighbours. And they certainly are rather interesting characters, who it seems are renting at number 14. And I know that because the previous owners vacated last year after a terrible divorce. It works out Pat was becoming far too involved with a work colleague at the Prudential, and things came to a head last August when Gerald caught them buying a dine-in for two meal at the M&S just off the Brackley Way roundabout. Haven't seen either of them since, but wherever you are now, Pat and Gerald, good luck. Possibly not so much to Pat. But anyway, I digress. Yes, we have some interesting new characters on the block. New kids on the block. And by characters, I mean students. I know I shouldn't judge, but it's quite clear by their behaviour they are bohemians. One of them's done nothing but wear shorts since they moved in. I've twice noticed a strong aroma of vegetable stock coming from the direction of their house on passing, and I've also noticed that if you get the angle right as you walk along the road, you can look straight through their living room window, through the living room door, over into the hallway, and quite brazenly posted on the wall, you can see a large pink-framed A1 poster that reads, "Keep calm and drink wine." Clearly the actions of someone who probably adheres to Bolshevik ideology, propaganda. All the warning signs are there, which is exactly what I said to Jill when they moved in 3 days ago. Jill, I said, this could be the end of the avenue as we know it. Now, I'm quite firmly a believer in the old each to his own approach to life, but when the actions of these people starts to encroach on my day-to-day living, it's just not fair. Vegetable stock today is all well and good, but I won't stand for a loving on my doorstep, which is possible if you don't keep an eye on these things. And that's why I've kept a log of their actions to date as evidence in case anything goes wrong and I need to raise a case with the authorities. And I'm quite sure you'd also agree it's my right as a resident of the Avenue to document the comings and goings of any strange faces in the area. And for the sake of common decency, it's only right to broadcast my evidence here today, which I'm doing now. I call this section of the programme, Halt, Who Goes There? Halt, Who Goes There? A regular update of suspicious activities on Altrincham Avenue. It's Thursday night. It's 6 minutes past seven and the main student's outside the front of his house. I can clearly see him. Who in their right mind leaves the house at this hour? I do not know. And he's carrying a plastic bag. He's quite possibly off to attend what looks like a road traffic protest, I imagine. If you think that's shocking, listen to what happened next. It's 11 minutes past seven. He's back. Where he's been with a plastic bag for precisely 4 minutes and 28 seconds, I can't fathom. Oh, yeah, he's got the bag stuck on the bush. He snagged it at the front of his drive. It's come open. I can clearly see there's a King's... No, it's not King's. It's a Tesco-owned brand. Yeah, he's got a Tesco-owned brand. Jill, he's got a Tesco-owned brand loaf. And, yeah, he's got a large milk as well. The ones you have to hold with two hands, really big. He's gone back in now. Just for the record, he was still wearing shorts. So there you have it. The diary of a madman. Not mine, his. Anyway, talking of flaunting the rules, I thought I'd theme this week's interview on a subject we all take great interest in when it comes to knowing our neighbours. Crime and punishment. Or at least seeing that any bad deeds that go on around here are correctly noted and reported. Which is why I've managed to organise a chat with one of the street's longest-serving residents, Richard Fanley. Richard's lived here on the Avenue since 1987. He's a staunch believer in justice, and he's also the powerhouse behind the 2017 movement that launched Altrincham Avenue's very own Neighbourhood Watch scheme. In this interview, Richard talks openly about the events involving an indecent word daubed on a grit bin that drove him to make a stand against street crime, and how, by reaching out to the rest of the Avenue with a call to arms, he's keeping crime at arm's length. And no doubt there'll be plenty of anecdotes from his long and diverse life, including his glorious time spent working in the wholesale paint trade, which I found fascinating. So sit back, relax, and without further ado, let's take it away. That's it, I've got you, I can hear you
now. Good.
Richard,
good.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Great to have you here, Richard, and I appreciate you being the first guest on my podcast. For those who don't know you, you're a long-standing member of the community and an associate of mine. We met at Neighbourhood Watch and discussed crime and punishment.
Yeah, disgust is the operative word.
Exactly. And I think before we go any further, would you like to tell us a bit about how you became the head of our local Neighbourhood Watch?
Well, we always talk about the good old days, and they were good, but they weren't brilliant. You know, we think law and order, we think that like crime and disastrous social etiquette is a 21st century thing, but it's not. It's been a scourge on this street for as long as I can remember. And in 1987, there was just a sort of, I'd say, a tip of the iceberg that allowed me to see below the ocean to the full iceberg of the depravity of the local area. So we formed a sort of committee, what became the Neighbourhood Watch. Of course, we didn't know at the time what Neighbourhood Watch was. This was just a sort of independent idea. In many ways, I came up with it independently. And I feel like even though Neighbourhood Watch has been a thing for years, I should get credit for inventing it because I did it off my own back.
Now, when you first started, it was slightly different to the way we see Neighbourhood Watch today. As you said, you were breaking new ground here. You were one of the originators. And one of your early suggestions was that people wear body plates, body armour. They patrol the streets. And we all crafted weapons, which is something that I wasn't sure about at first. But when you showed me how to turn a golf club into a type of sword, essentially, I was really turned on to this. Sadly, things were blocked by the authorities. But could you just give us a rundown of that original idea you had for the protective clothing?
The Army and Navy stores have always been good, but largely it's just for people who work outdoors these days. You know, like, it's always been a kind of not very Army, not very Navy. You know, it's just a sort of, essentially it's a fashion thing. We can't get protective, like, flak jackets and things like that. So I suggested that when people finished their cornflakes packets, instead of throwing them away, they saved them up and cut it out, and then they could just sew that into a sort of Pringle sweater, and they could make themselves body armour, that kind of thing.
Now, it's a great idea, but as we know, the authorities didn't go for it. David Wilcox, I remember, invested quite heavily in a pair of leather trousers, which he turned up in, and they'd had the area for the what I can only describe as the bottom cheeks removed. That was a step too far. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, we all encourage in that sort of situation, we want distractionary measures. You want the assailants, the perpetrators to be befuddled and off guard, caught unawares. But I think, you know, showing you behind is a bit too, you know, we're not monkeys in a zoo.
Civilized, I think, is the word.
Yeah. Again, it wasn't mean-spirited. It wasn't like some sort of wrong. If anything, he was just over-enthusiastic. So in many ways, you've got to applaud, like, A for effort, but unfortunately, gross indecency, technically.
I think David Wilcox has always been a very willing member of the community, and I think that sometimes he gets a bit too excited. Perhaps that's why he's never taken a wife. I don't know. But I must say, he's a wonderful man, and I'd do anything for him, regardless of the trousers he wore.
Yes. If everyone was like him, we'd have a much better neighbourhood. Wouldn't need watching.
Indeed. I heard you mention the tip of the iceberg.
Yes.
The graffiti issue.
Oh.
If you could go into some detail about what was written.
Basically, you know, we got a grip bin, right?
It's the one next to the BT payphone box, which is now out of commission. There's been talk of placing a defibrillator in there. I don't know if that will happen, but it's been there for some time, as long as I can remember. And I know it's been a hotbed of graffiti action for years. But there was one piece of graffiti that tips you over the edge. Am I right?
I mean, I wish the defibrillator had been there in 1987, to be honest, the shock I had. Basically, I walked past the grip bin and somebody had crossed out the R, so it just read git bin.
Now, these are strong views, and I must warn people listening, we are not condoning the use of this language.
No. I suppose if I just say the G word, you'll know what I mean when I say G word.
From now on, we should refer to it only as the G word. And I think if anybody does have an issue with it, we must warn them to turn off now.
Yeah.
But yes, let's call it the G word. How do you think this came about?
It was premeditated. This was not a spur of the moment, whimsical gesture. This was malice of foresight. This was.
These people were obviously working together in a group. They'd obviously organised it well in advance, and they were full of venom and hatred, and they wanted to spread their evil. But we stamped it out.
Like, figuratively, sadly, I didn't literally get a chance to stamp it out, but, you know.
Would you like to tell us the anecdote of how we tracked them down?
Well, there had been some weeks since the grit bin incident, and everything had died down. People had moved on.
People had almost grown accustomed to walking past it every day.
And also, some people didn't even think it was a big deal in the first place. They thought it was funny. That became my nickname for a bit, the G word. That's what they used to call me, G bin. I mean, someone tries to sort of get to the bottom of it, make a stand, make the place tidy, and he gets ridiculed for it.
And that's not funny.
I think, as the phrase goes, not all heroes wear capes. So sometimes you just got to roll up your sleeves, take it on the chin, and just get on with it. Because I was waiting for the moment for the perpetrator to slip up.
Now, this is where it gets quite exciting.
So, yes, well, what I'd done was I'd managed to put a tape recorder on top of the phone box, and I'd record. Every 45 minutes, I had to make some excuse to go to the phone box to turn the tape over, but I'm resourceful. I basically smashed the phone in my house so that I had an excuse to always have to go, and I would go, and I would swap the tape over, and then I'd come back and I'd listen to it. And then after about 5 weeks, I was there and I brought the tape in. I heard a voice. He laughed with his friends saying, ah, ha, 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 ha. Did you see old Jeebin coming here using the phone because he hasn't got any money for a real phone, which wasn't true.
I know for a fact you were one of the first people to have a cordless telephone.
Yes, yeah, but that's it. It's just nothing but wall-to-wall malice with those people. It's just spite. But I heard a tape and they were laughing about how I still didn't know and nobody knew that 5 weeks ago they were the ones who graffitied off the R, making it the G word, and I had egg all over my face. Well, the egg was on their faces, wasn't it? Because I'd heard them, I'd seen them, and then I had evidence of them saying that they'd done it. So I knew who it was. It was Albert. You remember Albert?
Albert Riddler was one of the most notorious young criminals in the area between 1987 to 1993. I don't know what's happened to him since, but I know that his parents didn't bring him up properly. He rode a BMX bike during weekdays when he should have been in school. The last I heard is that he was dead. I can't clarify that, but the punishment that he was dished out by you. And you can tell us what that was here today in supreme confidence, Richard.
Well, yes. So basically, I went around the house where he lived, his parents' house. Obviously not his house. He was too young to own a house.
He was 11 years old.
Well, I went in. I said, excuse me. They said, oh, not you again. Because I was often around there complaining about their telly.
They were the sort of people who watched ITV.
Yeah.
And you could hear it coming out of the front of the house all hours. Daytime television, afternoon soaps, even the slightly sexy stuff in the evening, full volume coming from the open windows, both downstairs and up.
If you're going to have the telly and you've got to shut the windows, no matter what the weather, that's the rules.
Disgusting people. So tell me, Richard, what happened when you confronted Albert's parents?
I said, Albert, is there something you want to tell us? Do you know, leave it open-ended so he fills in the blanks. Of course, being 11, he wasn't quite up on his mind game, so he was just like, no. Didn't even register with him that this was a gambit. Too stupid to even know the mind games I was playing. So his parents said, like, what are you talking about? I said, well, do you want to tell me about what you did to the grip bin? And he said, no. And I said, I know that you and your mates crossed off the R and made it...
Don't use the G word.
The G bin. He said, no, I didn't. And then it got to the point where he wouldn't accept it. And then I remember I just screamed in his face. I got to the point, you know, he just pushed my buttons. And I got really angry. I was perhaps too angry. But sometimes, you know, when you're dealing with a master criminal like that, you know, it's hard to keep a handle on your composure. And I just screamed, I've got a tape of you confessing it.
I remember that moment happening, and I remember several people came out onto the street and watched.
Yeah, people started crowding, going, what's going on, what's going on? People thinking that old Richard Fanley's gone a bit, you know, gone off on one. What's finally pushed him over the edge? Because, you know, I'm such a restrained person ordinarily. And so I had to basically address the audience like I was a politician or something. I had to say, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure, but displeasure at the same time, to tell you the mystery of the grip bin has been solved. And lots of people looked at me funny, like, what was I talking about? Like they'd already forgotten the grip bin incident. So that's just the sort of people we have in our street.
Exactly. A lot of people forget, but we don't.
No, not us. Not the good ones. So I said, I know who crossed off the R and made it.
Don't use the G word.
G bin. It was him, pointing, you know, at the lad.
Straight into his face.
Yeah, I was clearly pointing at him. He wasn't fazed. His parents were fazed. And they said, is this true? And he said, yes. Me and the lads, we thought it would be funny to cross off the R and make it say...
Don't use the word, just call it Jeebin.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jeebin. It's just a bit emotional because...
You're doing very well, Richard.
Thank you. His parents said, really, that's what you did? And he said, yes. And then they turned to me and said... Who cares?
That says a lot about the type of parents he had.
I was exasperated. I care. And I think if you look in their faces, pointing to the people in the streets, you always know that they care too. And everyone, well, shrugged in agreement. I mean, they didn't want to take sides, but you knew they were on my side the way they stood there shuffling awkwardly on the spot. But they were with me. And then the parents said, what are you going to do about it? And I said, with the evidence I have, I could see a custodial sentence in the future. I'm going to call the police.
Yeah.
And I'm going to call the council. And I'm going to call the local paper. And I'm going to call Esther Ranson. We're going to phone into all the local radio stations and tell them, unless, of course, you go and you put the R back in, the grip bin, and I want you to go around every single person's house and apologise in person.
Exposing the street gangs.
Well, exactly.
And what happened? What happened, Richard?
Well, they got some Tippex. Tippexed onto the grip bin. Then they got like a yellow permanent marker to paint it like yellow. And then they got a black permanent marker and put an R on it. And then they went round everyone's house apologising. Or at least that's what they told me. I mean, they came to mine and I said, oh, you're off to everyone else's house. They said, yes. I watched them go up and down. They'd knock on the front door. The kid would mutter a few words, point at me. They'd both look at me, laugh. And then he'd move on to the next house. So fair play to the character neighbour. Once justice had been meted out, everyone took it in good spirits. So that was good.
Now, these days, criminals are a lot harder to get hold of. You can't use a TDK tape cassette to really capture every moment there. We need security cameras, which we don't have. But I've been taking note of some of the graffiti that's come up around the grip bin since. And we don't know who's done this, but I've compiled a list of the top three offensive things written on a grip bin. I'll put them in the order I think they should be in, and then I'd like you to put them in the order you think they should be in of offensiveness.
Yes.
So if you're ready, number three, Lee Tring cried at Toy Story 2. Oh. Now, I've never seen Toy Story 2. I haven't seen any of the Toy Story films. I don't know if they're horror. I'm not sure.
I myself also have not seen Toy Story 2 or any of the Toy Stories. I'm assuming the joke must be that he's a grown-up, which is why he's a buffoon for doing it.
I feel that this man, if he does wish to cry at the film Toy Story 2, he's perfectly within his rights to cry at the film. But I think it's wrong to point him out like this and make him a victim.
It's unfair to suggest that just because he found a film moving, he is deserving of ridicule. Films can be very emotional. We've all shed a tear at Zulu.
Somebody here is clearly victimising him. That's number three on my list. Mm. Then at number two, your mum likes Scotch eggs and she's vegan. Oh. Whoever's mother they're aiming that at, if she's a vegan, she's prone to illness and disease, so she probably doesn't go out much. But if she does see that, it's not only increasing her chances of catching a cold or flu by standing near a grip bin to read it, but the fact that it says she likes Scotch eggs when she's vegan is just pure bullying.
Do they mean vegan Scotch eggs? Or are the two things unrelated? Does she like Scotch eggs and she's vegan? That's two things to take the mickey out of for. Or does she like vegan Scotch eggs, which they're making a joke about because it's like, what's the point of a vegan Scotch egg? The whole point of a Scotch egg is that it's meat. It's a meat wrapped around an egg. It's like a vegan's nightmare. So, a vegan Scotch egg is just like, it's like you might as well have a glass of water.
And that really upsets me. And the one that really gets my goat that I would say is number one was written on the wall at the other end of the avenue, and it simply says, "To Kevin Fleming, you look like E.T. from Paul."
I feel that the sort of the meanness of the vegan one might even be worse than E.T., you know, because the thing is that as much as E.T. is a funny-looking fella, and we can all agree he is a funny-looking fella with the weird luminous finger and all that, like, people like E.T., likeable. So if they say he looks like E.T., there is a sense of bonhomie about that, you know, potentially. Whereas going off on someone with Scotch eggs and vegan is just mean.
Anyone who thinks that they know someone who looks like E.T., I would keep that quiet because I think that's really offensive to call anyone an alien. And I don't know who Kevin Fleming is. I've looked up his name. I've gone through the phone book on several occasions and rung as many Flemings as possible, but nobody admits that they know who Kevin Fleming is. If I could find out who he was, I would help him find Paul and I'd bring him to justice, but I can't.
I mean, it's difficult. As you say, it's difficult because there's so many factors that don't add up.
I think you could be right there. Before we finish up, I've got a few other questions for you. When and where would the next meeting be for the neighbourhood watch?
Well, as we, you know, It'll be every Thursday, as you know.
Regular as clockwork.
It's important to be regular. We were going to do it round mine for a barbecue, but what with the responsibility for social distancing, we're just going to do it all on a massive sort of telecom call, which will not be problematic at all. I think it's going to be interesting to have 80 of us all working to the big ethos, to the big philosophy, all trying to chime in with their ideas, all on one call. So everybody knows what's going on. They just fall in line, and the neighbourhood is a beautiful place.
It's about the rules. It's always about the rules. And I think if you obey the rules, you'll come up with strong results.
Yeah.
It's been a very technical conversation so far, and we've spoken about the world of the neighbourhood watch. But another thing I thought would be interesting for people listening would be to talk about your professional side selling paint, which I think would be wonderful for people to hear the human side of you.
Well, all right, yeah. So I used to sell paint. I had a little depot where we'd have a little factory where we didn't make the paint ourselves. The paint was made by someone else. It came to me. You know, it sounds obvious when you say it out loud, but, you know, the misunderstandings I've had around that. So... I remember somebody came in, had a look at all the buckets of paint. You know, it's a bit more complicated than that, but that's probably too much detail to go into the minutiae of investigating the different pots of paint. He came in and he saw a paint. It was a bowling green. It's a real nice dining room green. And he said, "That's nice, but can you make me up avocado green?" So I said, here we go. I can't. I can order you in some avocado green. But I can't sell you avocado green because all I've got is bowling green. And he left.
I'm slightly lost.
He thought I made up the green.
Yeah.
Hello?
Richard Fanley, it's been absolutely wonderful to be able to share these stories with you, letting people really know what goes on here on Altrincham Avenue. I must go now. Jill's calling up from downstairs and I have to change the bandages on her knee. So, Richard, I thank you very much for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I wish you all the best. Richard, thank you very much.
Good night.
Good night. I think it's off now, so I'll press stop now. If you've enjoyed this episode of Meet the Street, remember to like and subscribe on iTunes or your favourite podcast provider. Follow me on Twitter at Plimpton David and join my Facebook page at Meet the Street One. And if you're really feeling generous, you can donate a small fee via ko-fi.com/Meet the Street. Every penny helps. Until next time, goodbye. Jill, I've done it. You can use the spare room for the washing now.